It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66. WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, April 28th. How are we doing this morning? If you're on your way to a tee time, wishing you a great round. Remember to stay positive. Have fun. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Golf Zone Range by David Ledbetter with the latest golf technology in Little Ferry, New Jersey, and now in Westbury, Long Island. Learn golf faster, www.golfzone.com. All righty, well, the big story this week is the report that the PGA Tour Enterprises Player Equity Program announced that they will reward 200 PGA Tour players with $1.5 billion in equity. So basically, the players who stayed loyal and remained on the PGA Tour and did not bolt to live golf for bigger riches are getting rewarded in a big way for their loyalty. How do you feel about that? Well, I think it's like rewarding somebody for not robbing a bank, but that's just my opinion. I just think there's other reasons to stay on the PGA Tour. Legacy, history, playing with the best, and the money they're getting, they're making tons of money as it is. And you wonder where most of the $3 billion investment from the SSG, the Strategic Sports Group, in that joint venture with PGA Tour, you wonder where all that money is going. And it's to the players, it seems, not to junior development, not to charity, not to other programs that will, in quote, grow the game. Doesn't seem like it. The money is going to the players because they need to get paid for their loyalty, for sticking with the tour that made them rich and famous in the first place. Now, I'm not in favor of paying professionals for their loyalty, but I guess it's better than these guys bolting to play for a league that is owned by the Saudis. Now, this joint venture program between the PGA Tour and SSG, SSG is that group of American billionaires who mostly run professional sports teams in our country. They will give the players an opportunity to be owners of the organization. So we'll probably learn more about that in the future. But from what I've read so far, reports have Tiger Woods setting to receive $100 million. Well, because Tiger is a billionaire already, he needs another $100 million. And Rory McIlroy, he is set to get $50 million. Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas reported $30 million. And up to 200 players will be paid for sticking with the tour. And according to reports, about $100 million will be divvied out to the players every year. So all because of LIV, the big disruptor, these top PGA Tour players are going to get richer. Well, I have, would really love to see how some of that $3 billion would be used to perhaps develop junior golfers, more inclusiveness in the game, benefit charities throughout the country. And maybe that is still to come because, we don't know a lot about all this yet. But the other big question to me is, how will the Strategic Sports Group, this SSG, see a return on that investment? That's a lot of money. And don't you want a return? I'd love to hear what the plans are for that. Well, we'll talk more about that issue in the 8:40 segment this morning. Gary Van Sickle of SI Golf will join us then. But in other news this week, Roy McIlroy, when he was asked, he said he would be open to returning to the PGA Tour Policy Board. He resigned his position with this board last November, saying he needed to spend more time working on his game. He said he does not think enough progress has been made toward an agreement that would bring the two factions together, the PGA Tour and LIV Golf. And, I'm not convinced that this unification is truly what the majority of the decision makers on the PGA really want. And maybe that's why we haven't seen much progress in that department. In other news, Greg Norman, before the LIV tournament in Australia began, said he would be open to LIV events going to 72 hole tournaments. Right now, as you know, the events are 3 days and 54 holes without a cut. Well, you know, it's been difficult for them to get solid TV coverage for three rounds, so I would think TV coverage of four rounds would be like pulling teeth, but maybe the powers to be that control the rules with the world ranking points would take the LIV tournaments more seriously if they did play 72 holes. And the LIV golf tournament in Australia is complete with the time change. Brendan Steele at 18 under beat Louis Oosthuizen. That's a name from the past. By one, and still beat Charles Schwartzel, John Rahm, and a couple others by two in the individual competition. In the team competition, the Aussie team won. Ripper GC, that's Cameron Smith, Lucas Herbert, Matt Jones, Mark Leishman, they beat the South African team in a playoff. And from what I could tell on social media, there were huge crowds there in Australia. But it's very difficult to tell from the LIV website what actually went down under in Australia. Just saying, it's kind of hard to tell. PGA Tour 2024 Zurich Classic in New Orleans. They're doing team play this weekend. Four ball in the first and third rounds, alternate shot in the second and final round this afternoon. Zach Blair and Patrick Fishburn from Utah, former BYU teammates, they head into the final round at 23 under, one shot ahead of Luke List and Henrik Norlander, two shots ahead of Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry and Ryan Brehm and Mark Hubbard. Rory looking for his 25th tour title. And Rory and Shane, they started a bit slow yesterday, but they finished strong, and Rory closed out with a beautiful bunker shot and a tap in for birdie on the par 5 18th. So they will start this afternoon two shots back. And today, as I say, is alternate shot, which is always interesting. The LPGA, they're on the West Coast, the JM Eagle Loud Championship at Wilshire Country Club in L.A. Defending champion Hannah Green and fellow Aussie Grace Kim. They are tied for the lead at 7-under, one shot ahead of Jin Hee Im, Esther Henselit, and Maya Stark. Jin Hee Im is an LPGA Tour rookie, and she set a new 18-hole scoring record there, 8-under 63. I'd love to shoot an 8-under 63. Nelly Korda, she did not play in this event after winning her fifth straight tournament, the Chevron Championship, her second major title last Sunday. She controlled her nerves coming down the stretch. She shot a 3-under 69 at 13-under overall. She beat Maya Stark by two shots. And as you know by now, Korda's five straight wins has tied Nancy Lopez's five straight, which Nancy accomplished when she was a rookie back in 1978. And Annika won five straight in her 2004-2005 season. So certainly Nelly Korda, if she can continue this amazing streak, could really help boost the LPGA Tour and bring more viewers in to their TV coverage. If you have not seen Nelly Korda swing, oh my God, she has an incredible swing. Very fluid, just a perfect swing to watch. But I don't think we can put too much pressure on her to be the sole American star to spark more interest in the LPGA. I mean, it's a great story, and more people are tuning in, which is great. But it can't just be all up to her. But having said that, hopefully she can keep the streak alive because it's so much fun to watch. Well, I want to share a personal story with you. When I returned from the Masters, I was opening up my mail, and I received three beautiful handwritten notes from legends who I wrote about in my new book, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. And, you know, you've heard about the book, I hope, by now, 12 golf legends that I interviewed within the last year who share just great stories about their careers and life wisdom, what they learned from golf that they use in their day-to-day life. And so I get this beautiful note from Jim Nance. And just so amazing that he wrote me this note. And he talks about how much he enjoyed the book. Well, he wrote the foreword to the book. And it was just so gracious of him to not only write the foreword, but to write this note thanking me and saying how much he enjoyed the book. And then Amy Alcott wrote a gorgeous note. She's one of the six female legends in the book. And, you know, I love that chapter on Amy Alcott. I titled it, Be the Captain of Your Own Ship. You know, she did not come from a country club family, and neither did I. I mean, she took up golf on her own. Her parents would drive her to tournaments and to the indoor place where she took lessons when she was a kid. But she organized all of that on her own, which I think is, you know, a great learning lesson for young people. Initiating, you know, signing up for tournaments, lessons. I remember when I was a kid, I would register to play in tennis tournaments and organize all of that. But yeah, my parents, they weren't tennis players, but they drove me everywhere and were very supportive. And I just think taking that initiative really taught me a lot when I was a kid. It taught me how to organize. It taught me time management. It taught me how to take initiative. And Amy Alcott, you know, tells some great stories in her chapter about sneaking on Riviera. She would sneak through the fence and she'd play golf with the boys. And she'd be on the practice green at Riviera right next to Hollywood star Rita Hayworth. And she didn't even know it was Rita Hayworth at the time. But I also got a beautiful handwritten note from Ben Crenshaw thanking me for including him among the 12 legends in this book. I'm like, are you kidding me? Ben Crenshaw is thanking me? This guy is a legend. And I mean, how extraordinary these golfers are on and off the course. I mean, Ben Crenshaw, Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson, Gary Player, Bernard Longer, Padraig Harrington, Nancy Lopez, Amy Alcott, Dottie Pepper, Annika Sorenstam, Jan Stevenson, Renee Powell. And it was fun to hand Padraig Harrington a copy of the book directly when I saw him at the Cognizant Classic at PGA National about a month ago now. But in the book, Padraig talks about embracing fear, and that he still feels fear, not just nerves, when he heads to the first tee, which I thought was an incredible revelation. And he talks about how we all should embrace that fear. So a lot of cool nuggets in Padraig Harrington's chapter in Life on the Green. All right, coming up in a few minutes, you know, when you think of famous golf instructors, the name David Ledbetter is among the first names you may think of. David has coached 26 major champions, 7 top-ranked players through decades of instruction. He's a PGA Hall of Famer. He's authored 9 books, and he heads up Golf Zone Range Ledbetter, which opened recently in Westbury, Long Island. And that joins the Golf Zone Range Ledbetter that opened 2 years ago in Little Ferry, New Jersey. They're indoor golf training and practice facilities, and they feature golf simulators and instructors who are trained by David Ledbetter himself. So when we come back, we're going to catch up with the great David Ledbetter. Stay where you are.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to a world-renowned golf instructor, PGA Hall of Famer, David Ledbetter. Now, in addition to coaching 26 major champions, 7 world number ones, and many more of the world's most famous players, David is also a golf entrepreneur, inventor, and author of now 9 golf instruction books. There's a new one just out called Fix It Yourself. And he's developed a brand new concept in indoor training offerings called Golf Zone Range by Ledbetter. What an honor to have you on, David. Welcome to Talking Golf.
Hey, great to be here, and nice to see you again.
It's always great to connect with you. And well, let's start with Golf Zone Range. How would you describe Golf Zone Range and everything it has to offer for golfers of all ability levels?
Well, a few years ago, we merged with a group out of Korea called Golf Zone, and they're the biggest simulator company in the world. So essentially, down the road, we've decided that, hey, we need to have these practice facilities around the country, which we have now two, the latest one being just opened up in Westbury in New York. It's very much geared along around what they do in Korea, particularly Seoul. I mean, there's a number of these facilities there. You know, it's difficult to play and practice in Korea because literally the golf courses for many in many instances are way out of town, so it's an all day deal. So they actually play more golf indoors and outdoors in Korea. That's where a lot of people learn to play, and there's PGA, LPGA tournaments indoors. So it really is. They've taken it's almost like I wouldn't say it's a different sport, but a lot of people, I mean, they love to practice over there, and we can see the quality of these players that are playing now on the LPGA tour in particular and on the PGA tour. Well, most of them started off indoors, and they worked their technique indoors, so they weren't sort of frustrated at getting out there worrying about, you know, hitting it fat and taking big divots and one thing or another. And I think there's a definite case for learning indoors, which we've seen. I mean, some of these young kids over there, you honestly want to see them sort of in their sort of 8, 9, 10 age group with really, really stellar technique. So they're learning at a young age. And it's starting to catch on in the States, especially in metropolitan areas like New York. And obviously there's a number of places around the country, especially in the winter, where people can not only just entertain themselves, because there's two aspects to it. There's golf zone range and it's called golf zone social. Now, social is a little bit more where you're going to have a few drinks and you get with your pals and you play different golf courses, where the golf zone range ostensibly is where people work on their golf games. And so we've got performance golf, which is a big indoor putting facility attached to it. You know, so it's really, you can actually cover every aspect of the game. You know, so we look at it from, hey, bringing people into the game. You know, it's interesting. There's a lot of instruction on the internet now, as I'm sure you're aware of.
Sure.
And there's not much actually geared towards beginners. Hmm. So we actually, one of the things we're trying to do is actually encourage beginners to come. We've got a program that we're running very shortly where we're actually going to get beginners, men and women, and sort of put them through a sort of a 6-week program and just see how they actually improve from actually starting from scratch. You know, the problem with a lot of golfers, obviously they go out with their friends, and the husband says to the wife, come on, keep your head down, keep your left arm straight, you know, which is instruction back from the 1900s, early 1900s for that matter. And so now you can actually learn. And so we know if you get off to a good start and you learn your technique correctly, then there's every chance you're going to be a decent player, no matter how athletic you are. And we're not suggesting everybody is going to be a tour player that comes through golf zone range for sure, but we just really want to encourage people, look, that as we know, the better you play, the more you enjoy the game.
Sure.
So you can go out with your, you know,
they offer private lessons, golf classes, swing analysis, even tournaments, as you mentioned, and special programs for junior, for seniors. I know Golf Zone has, 18 simulators, and they're state-of-the-art. They have an auto tee and ball retrieval system. That's always fun. Camera sensors on the floor, practice modes, 30 – here's fun aspect – 30 world-famous golf courses. So you can actually play courses like Pebble Beach, Harbor Town, Kiowa Island, Spyglass, King's Barnes Golf Links in St. Andrews, Scotland, just to name a few. So I think that aspect of it is also much fun.
It's really good. And if I may add there too, we've got, which is proprietary to Golf Zone, they have this movable floor. So you can actually, depending on the course you're playing, you know, if you are playing a very hilly golf course, you're going to get a side hill, uphill, or downhill line. And so it's actually pretty nifty to get on there, and actually even for teaching, to sort of show people how you would play a ball beneath your feet or a ball above your feet. So they've pretty much thought of everything, and it's they've got lockers there, you can get drinks there, it's a real social area too. So we're excited about it, and say I think, you know, we've got two now, and I think that's the start of many.
Well, the first location opened in Little Ferry, New Jersey in 2022. And this new one you just mentioned, Westbury, New York at 655 Merrick Avenue. And Myself being a resident on Long Island, I mean, it's great to have one on the island, and I think it's going to be very popular. I know Rich McDonough, who most recently was head golf professional at Marine Park Golf Course, he's leading the facility there. And so, your first two facilities are right in the New York metropolitan area. That's awesome.
Hey, listen, we know there's a tremendous number of golfers on Long Island, and so if we can encourage them to come and work on their game, during lunch hours, during the evening time, bring the family with them, and as I say, there is a big focus on instruction. We've got some really great certified instructors there who we've trained and who are sort of have the ability to teach players of every level.
So, according to the National Golf Foundation, David, I was looking at some research, and as of last November 2023, 6.2 million Americans have used a golf simulator in the past year, which is a 73% increase from pre-pandemic levels. And you can play a variety of top courses indoors, get top instruction. It's a win-win. So it just seems like it's become so popular now. And it's bringing so many more people to the game who might not be able to be outdoors, in the winter, obviously weather-wise.
Right.
And it's actually these golf simulators and these indoor ranges are becoming very popular.
They really are, as I say, especially in big cosmopolitan areas. I think that, I mean, obviously we're looking at expanding to go to the Midwest, out to California. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, Hallie very well, and my daughter, and
Yeah, I love
she's out there,
Hallie.
and she
Say
says,
hello to Hallie.
well, and she says, "Dad, it's so hard unless you're a member of the club here to practice, and there's just no facility. You've got to drive for an hour, and you go to a driving range, but that doesn't necessarily have great golf balls." And so, those are areas that we're looking at because, I say, you're right. I mean, look, if we can certainly bring people into the game, encouraging them to play better, that's how you're going to grow the game. And it's becoming very popular over here, these indoor facilities and simulators. Golf Zone do a lot of man, a large number they sell to private homeowners. I mean, people are putting simulators in their homes now,
Right.
working on things. And it's so we, I do a certain amount of instruction where people on their simulator and say, "Hey, David, can we look at this?" So I give them a lesson indoors. I'm at home, they're at home. And so it's a very different world that we live in now. And I say, for the longest time, obviously it was you go and practice at your golf course at a practice facility or driving range of some sort. I mean, there were driving ranges, but a lot of those driving ranges now are going by the board because the land is so expensive. And you look at the size of the Golf Zone range, and it's a very condensed building. I mean, there's plenty of space in it, but you're not taking up, 30, 40 acres type thing. So it's a, and they're going to be in shopping centers and so on, just so people have easy access to them. So that's the goal. And so it's very exciting because, as I say, it's following what happens in the Far East. We know Korea, Japan, the simulators are very, very popular. But now, I say, it seems to be catching on over here, and it's not, it used to be a bit of a stigma, now indoor golf. But you look what Tiger and Rory are going to be doing sort of down the road. So I think it's certainly something for the future, and it's another aspect to the game, and we've got to keep growing. We can't just sort of stick in the past, and so this is a modern way of looking at playing golf.
I'm sure you have witnessed so many changes in terms of golf instruction. When did you start teaching? How old were you?
Oh, I'm going to age myself now, but no, I started honestly teaching when I was 18. I became an
Wow.
assistant pro. I went, I was born in England, but I grew up in Southern Africa and Zimbabwe or Rhodesia as it was then. And so I turned pro when I was very young. I turned pro when I was 17. I gave my first lesson when I was 18. I can't remember. I'm sure it was an awful lesson, but it was one of those things that you learn on the job, so to speak. And I've always sort of loved teaching. So yeah, I've been teaching for over 50 years now. So I've
That's
seen
amazing.
not quite in the hickory era, but I mean, yeah, I've seen a lot of changes, obviously in equipment and players and facilities, and it's exciting, really. And it's the game is evolving, and when I was first out on tour in the sort of early 80s, sort of with the Nick Faldo, Sir Nick, I have to call him Sir now, Sir Nick Faldo and Nick Price. So I also actually call him Nick. I don't call him Sir Nick because he used to call me Lord Led. You see, a Lord outranks a Sir. So, so anyway.
God, we have that straight. I love
yeah.
it.
So when I was just one of very few coaches back in the day, And so now, if you look at it now, I would say majority of tour players didn't have coaches. Now the minority don't have coaches. You might get the odd Bubba Watson or whomever, but generally speaking, there's going to be some form of coaching, whether it be swing wise, mentally wise, whether it be just short game or putting, focusing on putting. The game's come a long, long way, and it's great to see.
Well, you've stayed in the forefront for decades, and yet, you've had to keep up with the new technology and the times. What do you pinpoint as the key to your success and in consistency and being able to maintain being in the forefront? When people think of golf instructors, they think of David Ledbetter for sure.
Well, I think, I've always loved teaching and helping people. That's the bottom line. And I always put that through to all the, obviously we train a lot of coaches at our academies, and we have a certification program that people can go through. And I always say, look, the first thing you've got to do is have the passion to actually help people. And that's always been my passion from a very young age. And so, teaching to me always came fairly easy. It was like, I always say, if I found it as easy to play as I did to teach, I would have won a few majors by now. But having said that, I'm still learning. That's the interesting thing about this game. You keep on learning. It's fascinating, from the biomechanics aspects of it, from the mental side of it, to aspects with short game, how equipment fits people, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's a continual learning process. And so that's the thing that fascinates me. I've got books. I'm in my office right now, and I've got books dating back to the 19th century on golf instruction. One of my hobbies is collecting old instruction books. And so it's interesting how, the main focus is still trying to figure out how to get that little, ball into a 4¼-inch hole. how we do it now, with all the, with all the technology out there. And I think in some ways, that I really think it's important that, to some way we head back a little bit and make golf instruction a little more simple, because most of the golf instruction now, if you go on the internet, you go on YouTube, for instance, most of the golf instruction seems to be geared towards good players.
Sure.
And so, unless you get your hands on somebody, that's always, it's still the best way, where you get a one-on-one and your hands are, you're showing them the drills, you take your time in getting somebody to get it, blurting out information. Just look at the amount of information that's out there. I think there's over 7 million pieces of advice on the golf swing on YouTube. And so you can get pretty confused. So it's a blend. If you're working with an elite player, yeah, there's more technically, it's going to be more technically geared, certainly. But if you're working with the average player or the beginner, for instance, you've got to keep things simple. You go back to the Ernest Jones and, the John Jacobs and Harvey Penix. They were really, really successful because they kept things pretty simple. And nowadays, I say, technology is great, but I always say it's only a tool to help us as coaches. It sort of aids us, it assists us. It shouldn't take over. Otherwise, you're not going to need us in you got to get AI, you go into a booth somewhere, put, swing and ticker tape will come out and say, okay, hey, you're doing this, this, and this. These are your numbers. These are the drills you should work on. So I hope it doesn't get to that point. So, one of the things that, all the technology doesn't surpass is the instinct that a coach has in order to help a player in a different way. I might say something to you and say something to the next person and it wouldn't register. Right. So you have to find ways to sort of get into the old, brain box there and say, okay, this is the way that you need to work. We all learn differently. Some people learn visually, some people learn kinesthetically, some people learn verbally, so it's really interesting. So I think, I'm continually learning and trying to help our coaches to sort of, be broad-minded and, you know, take all the information, all this knowledge that comes out, but learn it all so you can teach the game simply. Because in the end, I mean, if you go and take a lesson from somebody, I mean, the ultimate compliment is when they, to that coach or teacher, is that say, you know what, it made so much sense. It was so simple. And I saw pretty quick results. You know, people, you know, aren't going to wait that length of time before they start to go to some other coach or try follow some other trail. So, right.
You want to keep it simple. You don't want to have to overthink it. And it's so much, as you mentioned, is instinct and feel and somebody's finesse. And you don't want, I mean, the fundamentals are so key, but you don't want the golfer to, you know, have so much information in their head that they're just almost paralyzed because thinking about what, about the technique and everything they just learned. You have to keep it simple. And just, I find that if I just let my athleticism take over, I'm such a better player than if I start thinking about every nuance of every single
shot. Right. You know, as I said, the great John Jacobs, you know, he coined a phrase, you know, paralysis through analysis, you know, and you're right. And the problem is, you know, in golf, the ball is stationary. So you do have time if you want to sort of to, you know, go point by point, check by check. And, you know, those are tough people to play behind too, because, you know, they're just taking the lesson and trying to think of 15 different things at one time. So you're right.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. And my guest is Gary Van Sickle, senior contributor to SI.com, former president of Golf Writers Association of America. Gary, always a pleasure to have you on Talking Golf.
Thanks, Ann. And you do not have to call me Mr. President, but if you want to, you can.
I love calling you Mr. President, right? You should run again.
Well, everybody would like an alternative. Let's not get into that.
That's a whole other show. But anyway, let's look at some of the top stories in golf. All right. The big news this week is the PGA Tour Enterprises Player Equity Program announced they will reward 200 PGA Tour players with $1.5 billion in equity. Now, according to an article in Golf Week, $750 million will go to the top 36 players based on a formula that calculates their impact on the game, career success, popularity, et cetera, et cetera. Nearly 200 players will be paid for sticking with the tour. And it also went on to say that Tiger Woods would get $100 million, Rory McIlroy, $50 million, and Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, $30 million each. So my question to you, Gary, do you think the PGA Tour players should be awarded this loyalty money?
That's a tricky question. If you look at their value in terms of live money, they are all being grossly underpaid. Tiger Woods, had he gone to live, would have got 10 times. He probably would have got $1 billion. I think he might have turned down $1 billion, if I remember those rumors. But on the other hand, they're being rewarded for not being disloyal. So, I mean, isn't loyalty part of the game? Isn't that supposed to be just automatic? I think of Bobby Jones' old quote. Somebody said, he called a penalty on himself and he got all this accolades. And he says, you might as well praise a man for not robbing a bank. And that's how I feel this sort of is. But they're throwing money around. I guess these guys will be happier having gotten their live bonus from the PGA Tour. I mean, that's really what it is. It's a lot of money, and it just shows you that the guys who are rich, you know, when you're rich, you can never get enough. And that's just human nature.
Well, for the record, I'm not in favor of players jumping to live for the money. And I'm certainly not in favor of the PGA Tour players who stayed on the PGA Tour getting paid to do so. I mean, have we all gone mad here? I know times are changing, Gary, but this is just crazy. But hey, it gives us something to talk about, right?
Well, it does. You know, this group that invested $3 billion into the tour, I don't know how you're going to get that money back. But I talked to a former major champion, and we weren't talking on the record. And I commented like, well, you know, you've got these Saudis who are scary people, according to Phil Mickelson. And he said, Yeah, you know, want to know what's scarier? Investment bankers. They want a return on their money. And what are they going to demand for this in exchange? Okay, here's your $100 million, Tiger. Here's $50 million, Rory. They own you now in a way. So what are they going to do? How are they going to maximize profits? To me, the only way you maximize, you squeeze more money out of the tour, probably one way is to cut back on charity donations. Another way is to turn every tournament into a business that you own instead of each tournament being run by the community. And I think they'll continue to do what they've already started with these elevated events, signature events. They, to make money, it would be better to have, you know, from a TV and everything standpoint, limited field events of 30 or 40 players, a super tour, which is what Greg Norman really wanted back in the mid 90s. You have a bunch of super tour events and you get rid of the bottom 100 guys on the money list and you just let the stars play and you kill off all your other products. It's much like Coke bringing out Coke Zero and squeezing some of its diet. You know, you're eating your young in a way. So I don't think in the long run this is going to be good for the tour, but right now they're rolling in dough and everybody's happy.
You bring up several good points, and this PGA Tour Enterprises is all part of a joint venture between the PGA Tour and SSG, the Strategic Sports Group, as you mentioned, that will eventually pour $3 billion into the PGA Tour. But yeah, what is the return on investment? How can you make a return on $3 billion? And you know, we're talking about TV ratings are down and, you know, the PGA Tour is asking all these sponsors now to raise the ante to pay for these signature events and for the $20 million purses now in these signature events. So the model seems a little off to me.
Well, we're just simple media people. I was thinking of Phil Hartman's skit on SNL. I am just a simple caveman. Remember Frozen Caveman Lore? I'm a simple caveman. These guys at SSG are pretty smart. They've proven it. They make a lot of money. They're going to find a way to make the PGA Tour valuable. Maybe they make a deal with LIV. Okay, you guys come back, and we're going to keep LIV, and we're going to make that like the fall season in play for the same kind of money, and maybe it's just a team event. And maybe they really go all in to franchise these teams as a separate part of the PGA Tour and, you know, they run them like sports franchises with the draft and trades. I don't know. They're smarter than us. They probably have an ace up their sleeve that you and I haven't thought of yet. I mean, I have a lot of respect for those guys, but I also would not want to be in their debt.
The article went on to say in Golf Week, Gary, that the payments will be divvied out over the next 8 years, meaning the players will have to stay loyal to the tour during that time. And going forward, the tour expects to give out $100 million annually to its players. So, you know, you hear everybody dropping the line, growing the game. But I think what we're hearing so far is growing their bank accounts.
Yeah. Well, it bothered me when Rory earlier this year was talking about they need more smaller field events. This is, you know, I said, I don't know how the tour ever got here, having all these big fields. It's like, buddy, have you looked around? The PGA Tour is immensely successful. This formula of having 120 or 144 or 156 players in a field, that's what works. That's what created stars. Look at all the guys who are not instant stars like Rory as a teenager. David Duvall or Steve Stricker, Vijay Singh, it takes them a while to get out here. You build stars, and if you just have these limited field events, you're either going to kill off the rest of the tour because you've minimized them, or, you know, the John Deere's are at all those other events are going to turn into the Corn Ferry Tour, and there won't be a Corn Ferry. It's made it sound like, A, he wants money for nothing. He's afraid of the competition, and he wants more money. He can beat the competition, and he's got more money than he'll ever spend in three lifetimes. But when you're rich, you like to have more, I guess. This is hypothetical for me because I'm not really in that neighborhood. So I understand it, but I think I like the competition, and PGA Tour format's pretty good. And I, these smaller field of 60 events with no cut, those don't get my blood flowing whatsoever.
I agree with you for sure. And speaking of Rory McIlroy, he said he would return as a member of the policy board, but only if people want him involved. And Webb Simpson said he would resign from the policy board, but only if Rory would take his place. And Rory was quoted as saying that there has not been enough progress towards an agreement that would bring the game back together. So Rory wants to get back on that policy board.
Oh, thank you for gracing us with your presence on the policy board. I know it wasn't put to him that way, and he's just trying to be nice. Like, well, if they want me back, I guess I do it. He was on the board before. If there wasn't progress, maybe, you know, well, he could have got it done then. I don't know. Look, I think the PGA Tour's official stance from Monahan on down is we still want to exterminate LIV. We want them to go away completely. And LIV recently hired a bunch of executives, and I don't think they're going to go away. So eventually there's going to be a compromise, and maybe Rory can be part of that. He's changed his mind about the whole thing. He was very anti-LIV. One of the most – he led the player rebellion on LIV, really. And now he's gone to the dark side, and he wants reunification. I don't think the average golf fan – do I care about reunification? Well, I don't see John Rahm at the – Arnold Palmer Invitational or the Bay Hill. I don't see Dustin Johnson at any of these events. Do I really care? Do I really miss them? Somebody else is playing in their spot. I've got other players. I don't have to have John Rahm on my TV to enjoy golf. So I don't think that's a play, but I don't think reunification is necessary. If I was the tour, I'd probably play this the same way. You guys go play, you're off the radar, you're basically in witness protection, you don't get any media. Now, they've got some great events, and they play in Adelaide. They draw huge crowds in Australia because Australia is golf mad, and they don't have a lot of big tournaments. The money from the DP World Tour isn't there. So LIV has some very successful tournaments. I don't think they are going to go away. Well, just let them keep doing their thing, and the PGA can keep doing their thing. I don't think there has to be reunification, but a lot of players on both sides would like it.
That word unification has been the word of the year. And I agree with you. I don't need all these people to play in the same tournaments week after week. I mean, look at the TV ratings for the Masters when all the stars who qualified from LIV and from the PGA Tour were playing in the Masters. And it was reported that the TV ratings for the Masters were the lowest since 2017. So it doesn't seem like that worked. And I, you know, personally to me, viewer watching of golf has totally changed. And so, you know, you have to measure streaming, you have to measure on demand. You have to measure the global audience, which is huge globally for the Masters. But I just don't think unification or reunification is really the answer.
I think we have to call on the wise words of Peaches and Herb. Reunited and it feels so good. That's what they're hoping for. Yeah, you're right. TV ratings are down for all things, not just golf. It's all sports, TV shows. You know, probably started going downhill once Castle went off the air. Jefferson's, I don't know where to put my finger on it. But you're right. People are consuming these entertainment vehicles in a different way. And the ratings on TV are not reflective of it. Because if they were, some of these other sports, you know, women's golf does not get good ratings, but people are consuming that other ways too. It's a new day and age. So I don't think the ratings argument, as you said, I don't think that holds any water.
Let's end on a real positive note, Gary Van Sickle. Nelly Korda winning her fifth straight tournament, tying Nancy Lopez's five straight, which Nancy did when she was a rookie in 1978. How great is Nelly Korda? Love watching her swing.
Yeah, she's got a fabulous swing. I could just watch her hit range balls for an hour. She's exactly the women's tour especially needs a superstar. And to be honest, in America, it needs preferably an American superstar, but they need somebody. The narrative is better in golf, men or women, with, you know, a king of the hill or a queen of the hill or whatever you want to call it. she has put herself in that spot right now, and that's great. Now, to really get mainstream media attention, she's got to keep going. You know, it's an uphill battle for the LPGA. They are not getting stories written about them. They're not getting a lot of coverage. So this was the way to get it done, where she's playing so well, she can't be ignored. So my hat's off to her, but I'm not taking it off, because then you'll see my lack of hair. But yeah, kudos to Nelly Korda. She's a phenom, and maybe she can go after Byron Nelson's record of 11 in a row. Let's put that on the radar. That would be something.
Keep it going, Nelly Korda. Just a pleasure to watch her, and Scottie Scheffler, who is equally as incredible on the course. So a lot to focus on from a positive sense, Gary Van Sickle in golf, Nelly Korda, Scottie Scheffler, and we'll see what happens with the rest of this, quote, unification dilemma, right? Thank you so much for joining me here on Talking Golf, and you're looking good. We're recording this interview on Zoom. It looks like a beautiful day in Pittsburgh, and I know you already shot a course record on the golf course wherever you are.
Well, my scorecard hasn't been authenticated yet, so we'll have to wait and see on that. Thanks, Ann.
Thanks so much. Gary Van Sickle, SI.com. Thanks for being on Talking Golf.